You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Sports news site Deadspin released a video montage over the weekend of news anchors at Sinclair Broadcast Group stations around the country reading a company-mandated scripted message about fake news.
The sharing of biased and false
news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media outlets publish the same stories without checking facts first. Unfortunately, some members of the media use their platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda to control exactly what people think.
And this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
That's a clip from the video that's been making the rounds. It starts with one set of anchors reading an on-air editorial, then gradually adding the voices of 35 other anchor teams reading the same message. President Trump defended Sinclair yesterday in a tweet. Let's bring in Jane Kirtley now. She is a professor of media ethics and law at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota. She also directs the Scylla Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law. Jane, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. Good morning.
Well, let's start with the editorial in question. We just heard some of it there in the intro, but for those who haven't seen the entire Deadspin video or read the full editorial, what is the message here? What's it all about?
Well, I can only tell you what the text of it says. I can't guarantee I know exactly what Sinclair is all about. On the face of it, it looks like a call for media literacy, suggesting to the public that there may be journalists out there, pundits out there, who are presenting the news in a way that promotes their personal views, and that it's important to be on the lookout for fake information, for fake news, and to be a selective consumer of the media. So on the face of it, it seems okay until you start thinking about how it is essentially an attack on what I would consider to be what's essential, which is journalistic independence. It's very much, I think, of the school that suggests that there's one line of truth and everybody else is either making it up or sadly mistaken, with the result, of course, that you will be misled unless you watch our station, where we will, of course, tell you nothing but the truth. And again, to be fair, they've said, and please weigh in and let us know if you think we're not doing the job we should be doing.
So Sinclair, they're wanting this to be a two-way street. Perhaps if people don't know about Sinclair Broadcast Group, it might not be a name that's necessarily familiar to most television viewers, even if they're watching one of the stations that they own. What can you tell us about this company?
Well, it's been around for quite some time, and it's true that it's sort of flown below the radar for many people, but it owns a lot of stations in a variety of markets around the country. It isn't necessarily affiliated with any one particular network. It has Fox, it has NBC, it has some of the more, I guess I would say, marginal outfits like the CW, for example. That's what the affiliate here in Minneapolis is. And they have been basically trying to consolidate their influence around the country for some time. I should also mention that they own WJLA in Washington, D.C., which is, again, one of the local over-the-air stations.
And they own five stations in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, they've got their fingers in an awful lot of places around the country, some small markets and some fairly good size, like Minneapolis. Again, they've been around for quite a while. One of the reasons that they've been in the news before this particular story broke is that they are awaiting federal approval to buy out Tribune Media, which would add 42 television stations to their roster.
So that would boost them up to 220-something stations. What impact might this editorial have on what regulators think about this acquisition of Tribune Media?
Well, it's split to some extent among party lines. The Republicans, of course, dominate the FCC at this point, as is always the case when a Republican president is in office. It was Democrats during Barack Obama's administration. The current FCC chair, Ajit Pai, has been suggested that he has been promoting regulation that would make it possible for Sinclair to acquire all of this property. You know, for me, I think, and the Democrats, I should say, are raising a lot of questions about this, not only on the commission, but also in Congress as well. for me, this isn't so much an issue of ideology as it is of consolidation of ownership. Sinclair has not shown itself to be terribly interested in engaging in the creation of local content. It likes the idea of sort of consolidating its message from its headquarters, which are outside of Baltimore. They have argued and persuaded the FCC that it's important to, from an economics perspective, not to make smaller stations have the expense of having to maintain a local studio. And the concern I have about that, and this issue came up a number of years ago with Clear Channel Radio, is that you're going to have fewer and fewer stations that are actually producing content that is responsive to local community needs.
Talking right now with Jane Kirtley. She is a media ethics and law professor at University of Minnesota. Getting your thoughts on the Sinclair Broadcast Group editorial message and the Deadspin video that came out of it this weekend that was published. 800-642-1234. Should TV station ownership be allowed to have a hand in the editorial side of the news operation? Call in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jane, critics have previously accused Sinclair Broadcast Group of using its stations to advance a mostly right-leaning agenda. What are they pointing to as evidence of that?
Well, a number of things. I think one of the most recent examples, aside from what we were talking about a few minutes ago with this must-run editorial, is the fact that they are running editorials from, as their chief political analyst, Boris Efchitin, right off his stint in the Trump White House. You know, there's been content there that they are sending as must-run content to their affiliated properties around the country, and it tends to lean right.
Well, must-run editorials and packaged content is something that TV stations, regardless of Sinclair ownership or not, have received, whether it's packaged news coming from the main affiliate in New York, or whether it is a packaged editorial thing that has to air at the end of a newscast. Is this a trend we have seen for a long time?
Well, I think, as you suggest, packaged content in and of itself is not news. As an ethicist, when I look at it, the main issue I have is when it is basically being palmed off to the viewer as locally created. Again, Sinclair didn't invent this, and the so-called video news release is a phenomenon that's been around for a long time, where companies, private businesses, often groups from the medical world, provide prepackaged material that can air and make it look as if it's being created by the local station when it's not. For me, it's an issue of deception. If this is clearly labeled as what it is, I don't have as much of a problem with it from that perspective. But I do think that it is turning away from something that, during the Obama administration, the commission, the FCC commission, the FCC really supported, which was the idea of localism. That is, that if you're going to have a broadcast license in a particular area, you really do have an obligation to be sensitive to the needs and interests of the people in your community first and foremost. I mean, if they want national news, they have options to get that, but nobody else is going to cover what's going on in your own backyard, except for other local broadcasters.
Some media critics see a powerful company using local journalists to parrot one of President Trump's most consistent talking points, that the mainstream media isn't to be trusted. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think I would respond to the way, as I understand it, at least some of the journalists at these stations did, which was great concern. Ultimately, if you are going to undermine the public trust in the independent news media, you're really doing something that's much more important than just trying to gain a competitive advantage, at least in my opinion. You're undermining something that I think is central to our system, our democratic republic, which is that you have to be able to turn to the news media for truthful, accurate information. And I have to say, as somebody who's done work in a variety of countries around the world, this desire to undermine public confidence in a free press is right out of the dictator's playbook. I don't mean to be inflammatory in saying that, but the rhetoric is very similar to what I've seen in autocratic countries around the world. So it's kind of ironic to see a television station engaging in that very kind of undermining of public confidence. But again, Sinclair didn't invent it. It's been going on for some time.
Sinclair Broadcast Group is the country's largest broadcaster. It owns more than 190 TV stations, including five in Wisconsin. Talking about a video published over the weekend by Deadspin showing news anchors reciting the same scripted message on the spread of fake news. Jane Kirtley stays with us. She's a media ethics and law professor at the University of Minnesota. Getting your thoughts on the content of this editorial, 800-642-1234. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update right here on the Ideas Network.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
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 That is a clip from the dozens of TV anchors from Sinclair Broadcast Group reciting the same speech, warning against biased and false news. We're talking about this company scripted message, its implications here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The viral video montage from sports news site Deadspin had its own take on the intent of the message. Its headline was, "How America's Largest Local TV Owner Turned Its News Anchors Into Soldiers in Trump's War on the Media." We've brought in Jane Kirtley for analysis. She is a professor of media ethics and law at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota. She also directs the Scylla Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law. Getting your thoughts on this Sinclair editorial at 800-642-1234. Did you see this editorial on one of the five stations Sinclair owns in Wisconsin? Are you concerned that the media have personal biases and agendas, as the editorial suggests? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Let us start with Joe now, joining us from Waukesha. Good morning, Joe.
Yes, good morning. I believe that, going back to Reagan, changed the whole dynamics of news in this country by doing away with I don't know what it was called, fair and balanced. In other words, if you had anything in the media, you had to give both sides of the question. And Reagan did away with that. And gradually, this has gotten worse and worse, I think, with the rise of Fox News, fair and balanced, which, of course, is nonsense. I mean, I listen to public radio. I listen to public television. There are, I believe these are, literally, they are fair and balanced. But I think increasingly the media in this country has become more and more unbalanced. And I think part of the reason we're now facing some of the worst elements of this, as your guest mentioned earlier, even the potential of, signs of dictatorship, is the rise in the election of the man we now have in the Oval Office, who I think is really, in a sense, a psychopathic liar. He has a lot of problems. He's openly misogynistic, racist, etc. And I think with his rise, the media, these elements of the media are saying, well, before this, we had to have a certain level of dog whistle. We couldn't come out and say the things that are now, are being said, of course, at this point by the man in the Oval Office. And I think that this has really led to the sort of the gloves are off now, and we're getting this, with the Sinclair, with, the subject of this program. You're getting gloves off where these people are literally trying to create the image that mainline media are all liars.
And Joe, let's get Jane to respond here. Joe is taking a long view here, reaching back to Reagan era. Jane?
I would go even farther back than that if you want to think about the Fairness Doctrine, which is what Joe is referring to. As he said, this was a doctrine that was in place for many years in this country. It actually was born from an era when radio was on the ascent, and there were concerns that particular owners were feeding propaganda to the public. And so Congress stepped in. The FCC, as it is now, promulgated the Fairness Doctrine, which required broadcast licensees to cover controversial issues of public importance. That was the exact language. Exactly what they chose to cover was up to them. The FCC did not dictate that. But if they did provide a single viewpoint, they had an obligation to provide to responsible people an opportunity to reply to that. And it didn't have to be at exactly the same time, and it was never an equal time rule as such. But the idea that was over a period of time, you would present all sides of a controversial issue. This was actually upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1969, but then during the Reagan era in 1987, the FCC ruled that it was no longer constitutional, basically saying that because there are now many different ways to get what looks like broadcast information, that is what used to be over-the-air broadcast, you can now get it through cable, satellite, and now the Internet, that there was no longer justification to compel broadcasters to do something that we don't compel any other media in the country to do, which is to provide both sides. So many people do point to that as the watershed moment that made it possible for really opinionated, one-sided broadcasting to become the norm, at least for some outlets.
Let's bring in Thomas now in Milwaukee. Thomas, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I don't see a problem with the Sinclair issue. In fact, I think it highlights exactly the hypocrisy, I think, coming from the left, because they do the same thing. I mean, this stuff bubbles up after every major Trump initiative, every hot-button issue. The left and all the media organizations, I mean, straight down the line, parrot talking points. This speech was dark. They used the same words. And, you know, there's Fox News, which this caller before said fair and balanced was a joke. Well, I think he doesn't quite understand what the point of that was. It's not that they were going to cover both issues. Obviously, they have a right wing bias, but when you look at it against the entire spectrum of media, you know, that exists out there, they're one voice among nine other voices, including public radio, parodying the same line. So I don't really see an issue with any of this. I mean, remember the term fake news, and Cheryl Atkinson, who worked at CBS for many years, covered this in depth in a recent TED Talk, was created by the left, and then Trump turned it against them, because what we have here is the legacy media really, really worried about people tuning out, looking for alternative sources for information. And so they really tried to control the narrative, which is why Google now has Snopes and all these other companies to kind of determine what is fake and what isn't.
Let's
use it against them, and now they don't like it. And so it's, why not? You know, I mean, look, all of these companies have a bias. Public radio has a bias, although they're, you know, a corporation for public broadcasting. By statute, it's supposed to be fair and balanced, actually.
Well, let's bring in Jane Thomas here. Jane, how would you respond?
Well, you know, what Thomas is saying is something I've heard many, many times from viewers and listeners who see Fox as a corrective to what they see as the left-wing bias of the so-called mainstream media. Obviously, they're entitled to their opinions. I think what bothers me the most about Fox, and I'm talking here about the cable outlet, because I have to say that at least my local Fox affiliate, I think, is pretty reliable for local news, and I watch it on occasion, and I don't have any particular issues with it. But I think one of the issues here is the blurring of the distinction between news reporting and punditry. And studies have shown that viewers of Fox News often don't distinguish between those two things. I think those in the news media can draw distinctions between commentary and news, but studies show that that's not true of a typical Fox viewer. Now, maybe Thomas is not typical, and I'm not talking about him particularly, but all I'm saying is that sometimes the lines between factual reporting and commentary are so blurred that the reader or the viewer or the listener can't really draw that distinction. Again, nothing wrong with having an opinion, but the tradition in the mainstream media is to label it as such. And as the saying goes, you're entitled to your own opinion, but not your own facts. And I think it's the distortion of the facts that is what's causing the concern here today.
So, Jane, even though they can, should station owners be getting involved with local news operations?
Well, you know, I Here's the thing from my perspective. In when I was a young, naive lawyer and journalist working in these areas, it used to seem to me that it was appropriate for owners of stations, just as owners of newspapers, to have some input into what content is being produced. But what seems to be happening with Sinclair is that these political points of view are basically being imposed on them, overriding what the local station would choose to do. And I didn't mention this earlier, but I think something that's significant is that back in February, it was reported that Sinclair was asking its executives, including news directors, to provide contributions to its political action committee. I mean, this is really unheard of in terms of the mainstream media. So it's clearly an example of trying to turn a series of stations into a political weapon. And that's, to me, not appropriate interference by the owners of any media outlet.
Let's bring in Steve now, joining us from Sun Prairie. Good morning, Steve.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
As someone, I'm not a big Trump supporter. I did vote for him in the last election because I didn't like Hillary. But one of the things I do love about Trump is he's taken out a fight that we need to have. This media is just so incredibly biased. Most of the country, at least I say most of the country, 50% of the country feels like they don't have a voice, that they're racist, that they're bigots just because their political belief is what the media is telling them. So having Sinclair come out and say that this has got to end, if Trump had a part of that, good for Trump. The only issue I have with a Sinclair message is that we are not a democracy. We're a constitutional republic.
Steve, thanks. Let's bring in Jane.
Well, I go back to what I said earlier. The kind of rhetoric that we are getting from Donald Trump is not the sort of approach that I think someone that is the president of the United States ought to be engaging in. Presidents ought to support our constitutional principles, which include freedom of the press. Essentially, his tweets, and I'm looking at one from just yesterday, he says, Sinclair is far superior to CNN, even more fake NBC, fake news networks. I mean, it's this constant drumbeat of saying that the news media are making things up. It's one thing to say you disagree with the viewpoints that you see or the editorial choices that are being made, but it is a major leap forward to say that they are fabricating news, which I would have to add that under the FCC's rules, if a broadcaster is doing that, they're subject to FCC sanctions. So this is fake news, I guess, is my point. And obviously the president has a right to an opinion, as do all the people in this country. But again, to say you're making things up as opposed to saying I disagree with your point of view is, to me, a major leap into the area of autocracy.
Jane, knowing what we know about journalists, it's probably fair to say that the news anchors weren't exactly thrilled about having to read this editorial. When station management hands you something and says you must read this, it sort of runs contrary to what journalists are trained to do. But why do you think we haven't seen more journalists or individual stations standing up or speaking out about this?
Well, I mean, I think they are gradually starting to speak up, but I guess my short answer I'm going to have two answers. One is that, and I don't mean to malign broadcasters as a general rule, but I do think that it's important to remember that broadcast, unlike the print media, unlike internet, is subject to FCC regulation. And so over the years, I've noticed that some broadcast journalists seem to be more receptive to direction along these lines than might be the case for their print counterparts. I'm not saying it's a universally held view. I'm just saying that it seems to be much more common in broadcasting, and I think that's directly tied to the whole notion of FCC regulation, which does include, to some extent, content. Beyond that, I suppose a certain percentage of them probably agree with the sentiments expressed here, but I think, frankly, it's an economic concern. Are you going to take on your boss on something like this? And sometimes journalists do, and the consequence can be that they would lose their job.
We're talking with University of Minnesota media ethics and law professor Jane Kirtley about Sinclair Broadcast Group, which is defending itself against criticism for a recent on-air promo message that dozens of its local news anchors were asked to read that warned viewers about false news on competing media outlets. Sinclair's corporate headquarters scripted the message, packaged it for stations. Getting your thoughts on this at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to the phones now with Lou joining us from Cudahy. Hi, Lou.
Good morning. One of the reasons Donald Trump got elected was because of the media. America's tired of being lied to by both the Washington Access, which includes the Washington politicians that go along to get along boys, and the media counterparts who are not journalists any longer. They've become propagandists. That's my major point. And it looks like Sinclair is being targeted. I'm wondering why Sinclair.
So you're saying that Sinclair is being targeted here. Lou, what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, usually the left runs out trial balloons to see how successful they are. And then when they get some feedback from all the callers like myself, then they fine-tune the engine and take it out nationally and run a whole campaign about something, and it becomes talking points for leftist propagandists on the radio. And as I said, Trump got elected for two reasons: the propagandists on the radio and the left media, and the resistance to the American politicians in Washington who don't have the best interest of the nation in mind at all.
Lou, thanks. Let's bring in Jane.
I'm not quite sure how to respond to that comment because I'm not sure that I would agree with the proposition that was being put forward. Trump was elected, I'm sure, for a lot of different reasons, and many Trump voters I've spoken to had different reasons for voting for him, and some of them just didn't like Hillary Clinton. Some of them were looking for change and thought that Trump was the most obvious change agent that was out there. I mean, there are many possibilities, but here's what I would like to say. I think that concentration of media ownership is a matter of concern regardless of where you are on the political spectrum, and that to me is fundamentally the issue here. What we're seeing with Sinclair is, I think, a suggestion of what could very, very likely happen in the future, which is that the consolidation of ownership would essentially mean that there would be a point of view that would be reaching very, very many people in broadcast news operations around the country. I challenge the premise of bias. I challenge the premise of fake news. You know, it's been said that news, by its nature, has a liberal bias because it's out there looking for problems and trying to present those problems to the public so that collectively we may solve them. The role of the news media in this country has never been simply to praise whoever is in office at the time or to advance anybody's particular political agenda. And it seems to me pretty clear from what Sinclair has been doing that they do see themselves playing that role.
Do you think there's a case to be made that America needs a new, refreshened fairness doctrine for broadcasters?
You know, I'm not sure that there's the stomach for it, certainly not in the Congress as it is currently constituted. I do think that there would be constitutional issues involved because a centerpiece of the old fairness doctrine was this idea of spectrum scarcity. That is, that the broadcast airwaves are limited, only so many people can operate on them. It's a public resource, and therefore it has to operate in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. I am not sure that the current Supreme Court would agree with that. At least the majority would agree with that. So as much as I would like to see some reexamination of this question, I'm not sure that that's a practical possibility.
We're talking with Jane Kirtley. She is a media ethics and law professor at University of Minnesota, talking about Sinclair Broadcast Group, which is defending itself against criticism for a recent on-air promo message that many of its local news anchors were asked to read that warned viewers about false news. Sinclair's corporate headquarters scripted the message, packaged it for stations. What do you make of this editorial direction? 800-642-1234. Should TV station ownership be allowed to have a hand in the editorial side of the news operation? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. Back after this news update. dozens of TV stations belonging to the nation's largest broadcaster, Sinclair Broadcast Group, have aired video promotions in the last few weeks in which their local anchors read a prepared statement from Sinclair's corporate management about the, quote, troubling trend of irresponsible, one-sided news stories plaguing our country. We're talking about the message, its ramifications here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The national message from Sinclair comes as regulators are considering whether to approve its nearly $4 billion deal to acquire Tribune Media. Jane Kirtley is watching all this as media ethics and law professor at University of Minnesota. She directs the Silla Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Sinclair is in five markets in Wisconsin. Have you seen this editorial? What did you make of it when you saw it? Call in or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We have Greg, who sent an email saying that he's a small business owner and has recently pulled his advertising from the local channels owned by Sinclair. He says this is the most blatant abuse of favor trading he's ever seen by a government and a large corporation, and he would suggest anyone that advertises with Sinclair to do the same. Could this have monetary implications from advertisers, Jane?
Well, certainly it could, and I think it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Something like, you know, what happened with Laura Ingraham on Fox and the fact that advertisers were pulling out after she had criticized one of the Parkland school shooting advocates. I think money does talk, and Sinclair is in this for making money. So I can't say that that isn't a possibility. Of course, viewers would also have the option of filing comments with their local station. Stations, because their licenses are given to them by virtue of an application to the FCC, are subject to review, and they are required to keep public files. I know there's a way on every Sinclair station website that I've looked at, and I haven't looked at them all, for you to provide comments directly to the station. Of course, whether they review them or not, I can't say. They're supposed to. But there are a number of ways to indicate if you support this or if you don't support it.
Well, let's bring in another caller here. Let's go to Fergus joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Fergus.
Good morning. I wonder, as a professor, I believe that the big problem is consolidation of media. If the consolidation of media stops, if those companies are broken up, what's going to replace them? What does the business political cultural structure look like that is replacing those companies?
Great question, Fergus. Jane, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that is a great question, and if I knew the answer to that, I'd probably be making a lot more money than I actually am making. I think the model for local journalism in general, both print and broadcast, has undergone a massive sea change with the advent of digital media and the internet. And I think that we're in for a major correction here. Once upon a time, it seemed to me that consolidation wasn't in and of itself a bad thing because it would mean that resources could be deployed in ways that could actually give the viewer, the listener, more bang for their buck, and that would be a great thing. But what we're seeing here is that companies that perhaps do not have a journalistic tradition are being driven by other concerns, and in some cases those are political concerns. And I don't think that, at least in the United States, it's the view of most of us anyway, that the primary purpose for broadcast outlets is to deliver a political propaganda message. They're supposed to be, according to the Communications Act, acting in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. And that means covering local news issues, covering weather, covering sports, covering the things that the national media do not routinely cover. And when you're operating out of this, central office outside of Baltimore, Maryland, and dictating content to the whole country, it stands to reason that the information that the local outlets are going to receive is not going to be stuff that is tailored to them. So that is, I'd like to see the return to localism that the FCC was championing back during the Obama era. Whether there's a financial way to do that, and people have looked at different ways, including nonprofit models, foundation grants to help support local media. I mean, these these are all critical questions to which I don't have a clear answer. But what does concern me is that the farther and farther you get away from the local market, the less likely it is that the interests of those in that market will be served.
Jane, we've been seeing some chatter online about how this editorial message doesn't really matter because people aren't really watching local TV news anymore. What do you make of that argument?
You know, that's not true. I understand why people think that's true, but the most recent study I've seen out of the Pew Research Center from last year says that the aggregate viewership of local TV news is at least an order of magnitude higher than that of cable news. They have about 25 million viewers per night in the aggregate. That is not an inconsequential number. I mean, I'm a newspaper person by training, and I wish people were reading their local newspapers as avidly as they're watching local TV news. But the reality is that it still is very much a part of people's lives. And to dismiss it out of hand and to say, well, everybody's getting their news from the internet now and it doesn't really matter is missing the point. People do still get their news from broadcast local TV.
How important is local TV news outlets, especially in smaller markets?
Well, you know, in many smaller markets, the local newspaper is long gone, or if it is still surviving, it's likely to just be a weekly. And not that good work can't be done in weekly newspapers, and some of those newspapers are doing good work. But the fact is, if you need local news, if you need breaking news, whether it's weather or a big fire downtown or something that's going on in terms of what the city council is doing, there's no question that your local broadcast outlet is going to be the one that is going to have the opportunity to cover that. And so if they're not there and they're not vibrant and they're not committed to that kind of local reporting, then I think you're going to be losing out.
Let's bring in Willem, who's waiting in Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Good morning. I'm really concerned about this concentration of news media in the single, you know, corporate situation, because I think it's really dangerous to a democracy. I think, you know, the more diversity, the better. I think it's important for citizens to sample diverse media outlets. I listen to a lot of foreign news, the BBC, Radio Netherlands, German public radio, and other sources. So I think it's good to get a diverse view of what's happening. And what troubles me about our president is that, well, for one thing, he is a proven liar. I mean, that's we don't have the time to discuss all the lies that he tells, the easily demonstrable lies. And the fact that he calls the press the enemy of the people, I find deeply disturbing. That's the kind of language of despots, to call, you know, the foundation of a democracy, the free press, the enemy of the people, I think is extremely reckless and dangerous. So I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, I'm going to pause right there to bring in Jane, who has also worked with other media markets outside the U.S., and if you could bring in those insights here.
Well, you know, one of the things that I learned when I worked in countries after the collapse of the Soviet Union was how hungry the public was and how hungry the journalists were to be able to engage in reporting that was fact-based and not propaganda-based. You know, sometimes people regard as propaganda the information that they would rather not hear or that challenges their viewpoint. And as your caller points out, diversity of news sources is one of the strengths of what makes any kind of democratic society flourish. I'm not saying that any one media outlet can serve all purposes for everyone, and I would encourage people to seek out alternative viewpoints. The problem is that with the concentration of ownership and the fact that, again, people don't necessarily have all day to read the news, it's very easy to slide into the comfort of going to a particular news outlet that basically reinforces the views you already have, confirmation bias, as they call it, and that is what concerns me. I feel that we no longer have a shared wisdom in this country about, again, what the facts are. Everybody has a right to their own opinion, but can we at least agree that those opinions need to be based on accurate facts?
Jane, going back to Sinclair's attempt to buy Tribune Media, the $4 billion deal, is there a timeline on when regulators will decide whether that deal goes through?
I don't know exactly what the timeline is, but it's fairly soon. And there's been, as I mentioned, some reaction from Congress where they would like to slow this process down. But it could happen fairly quickly. And part of the question is going to be, as Congress looks into what the chair of the FCC has been doing over the last few months in terms of altering various rules. And again, I'm not suggesting that there's been anything underhanded about that. It's all been done on the public record. But there's a question of whether it's been done specifically to facilitate this particular acquisition. There have been rules in place for a very long time about trying to keep local area not having all the media into the hands of a single entity. I think those are good rules. I support them myself, although some of my friends in the broadcast community would disagree with me on that. So I think what we may see is some greater pressure being brought to bear. But the public can bring some pressure, too. I mean, we all have a right to comment to the FCC, and I just was reading something today suggesting that we ought to be doing that.
Well, I'm sure you'll be keeping an eye on what happens next with Sinclair Broadcast Group. What will you be watching for as the conversation on this editorial continues and the ongoing reaction to it?
Well, I guess what I would say is what I hope doesn't come out of this is this notion that there's a role for the government to step in and control the viewpoint of a particular owner or a particular media outlet. What I'm in favor of is diversity of opinion and diversity of viewpoints. We have a tendency in this great country of ours to sometimes swing too far in one direction or another when something happens that we disagree with. I think this is something that needs deliberate attention that we need to be thinking about. So I'm going to be watching what's happening at the FCC and what's happening in Congress on this, but also how the public engages in this. Because as one of your callers said, you know, we all have a right, at least those of us in the markets that Sinclair has a station in, to make our viewpoints known, and I hope people will do that.
Jane, thank you so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Jane Kirtley is a professor of media ethics and law at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota. She also directs the Silla Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law. This hour of the morning show was produced by Chris Molina. Michael Deringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening.